Asamuhurta ekasmin. Nanagareshu yoshitam. Savidham jagrihe pani. Anurupa swamayaya.
Apartments, and the Lord simultaneously assumed different bodily expansions, exactly matching each and every princess. He accepted their hands in perfect rituals by his internal potency. Purport. In the Brahma Samhita 533, the Lord is described as follows in regard to his innumerable plenary expansions.
Advaitam achyutam anadim anantarupam adyam purana purusham navayauvanam cha vedeshu durlabham adurlabham atma bhakto govindam adipurusham tamaham bhajami.
The Lord Govinda, whom I worship, is the original personality of Godhead. He is non-different from his innumerable plenary expansions, who are all infallible, original, and unlimited, and who have eternal forms. Although he is primeval, the oldest personality, he is always fresh and young. By his internal potency, the Lord can expand himself into various personalities of Swayam Prakasha, and again into Prabhava and Vaibhava forms. And all of them are non-different from one another. The forms into which the Lord expanded to marry the princesses in different apartments were all slightly different, just to match each and every one of them. They are so-called Vaibhava Vilasa forms of the Lord and are effected by his internal potency, Yoga Maya.
Atmathulyani Saravataha Ikhai Khasyam Dasa Dasa Prakritiye Vibhushaya.
Just to expand himself according to his transcendental features, the Lord begot in each and every one of them 10 offspring with exactly his own qualities. All these princesses were lodged in different apartments, and the Lord simultaneously assumed different bodily expansions exactly matching each and every princess. He accepted their hands in perfect rituals by his internal potency.
Uddhava,
he's now remembering this most glorious pastime of Krishna marrying simultaneously 16,100 princesses. This story is explained in further detail in the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam by Srila Shukadeva Goswami to Parikshit Maharaj. It explains how once the heavenly king Indra came to Dwarka to explain the great anxiety that he and the other demigods, and especially his mother, were suffering. Excuse me. There was a great demon of the name Narakasura, whose other name is Bhomasura. He was born of the earth. He was so powerful that he could conquer all directions. And he conquered even the planets within the sky, so much so that he forcibly stole the earrings of the mother of the demigods, Aditi, He forcibly took the umbrella, the sacred symbol of Varuna. He also stole away the beautiful peak of the Mandara mountain, which was used as a favorite vacation spot for all of the demigods. He created so much havoc. He would conquer sages, rishis, demigods, kings, and he would steal from them their beautiful daughters and keep them imprisoned within his own palace. But the demigods could not stand before Bhomasura. So they approached Krishna. "Please help us." So Krishna, in response, always anxious to please those who take shelter of him, he decided to take his wife Satyabhama on this great excursion to fight the demon Bhomasura. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur describes how Krishna was thinking when he decided to take his wife for battle. For several reasons. One is that Satyabhama, when she saw that Rukmini had the beautiful Parijata flower from the heavenly planets, he understood that she also wanted one. So he was thinking that when he goes to return the articles to the demigods at Amaravati, the abode of Indra, he would also collect for her a Parijata flower to make her happy. And also, the earth is the expansion of Satyabhama. And since he was going to be fighting the son of Mother Earth, he didn't want to happen to kill him without the permission of Satyabhama, who was the mother of the earth planet. If she gave permission, then there would be no injustice in murdering this demon. Also, Satyabhama was a very active queen. She liked excitement. So he was thinking this would be very pleasing to her, to participate in this great battle. So he and Satyabhama boarded on the bird carrier Garuda. And so beautiful and graceful, Garuda was flying through the sky until they came to the kingdom of Narakasura. Very terrible kingdom. No one could penetrate this kingdom. He was so expert at protecting his sense gratification that he created such a fortress with such protection that even the most modern devices of today could not compare. First, in the four directions, there were massive, massive walls made out of solid block, solid rock, like mountains. Somehow or other, if one were to get by those solid mountainous rock walls, there was another layer, which were highly electrified wires with very, very high voltage that could just electrocute anything and anyone. And if someone somehow or other got past that, there was this poisonous gas called anila that could just destroy anything that it touched. And if somehow one got past that, there was big, big, big barbed wire that would just cut anyone to shreds if they came to try to get through. And this barbed wire coating was erected by the great and powerful demon named Mura. Mura was a very, very terrible person. He lived in the water.
He had five heads, and he was guarding the fortress of Bhomasura. So Krishna, and what to speak? In each one of those layers, there were millions and millions of soldiers equipped with the most modern weapons of the time, all with mystic powers, and elephants and chariots. So Krishna, riding on Garuda, came and he saw the rock walls, and with his club he just started breaking them to pieces. And then with his Sudarshan Chakra, he just completely short-circuited all the electrical wires and tore them to pieces. And with his Sudarshan Chakra, he also ripped to pieces and destroyed the anila gases, just neutralized them. And the barbed wire with his club, he just destroyed that. And all the armies of Bhomasura were attacking Krishna. And Krishna was just beating them all down with his arrows and his club, and everything was just being destroyed. And when Mura saw this, he became terribly angry. Angry like fire. He came out of the waters, and with his five heads, which had five mouths, he started screaming in anger. Now, you have seen people get angry. Sometimes you raise your voice when you're angry. But this person was the personification of anger. When he saw what Krishna was doing to the fortress of Bhomasura, he started roaring. And when he roared, this sound was so piercing that it completely filled the entire earth, and then it filled the 10 directions of outer space. It filled the entire universe. And everyone was struck with terrible, terrible fear. His roar made everything shaking. And then he saw Krishna, and he attacked Krishna. In such rage, he ran toward Krishna. He threw his trident, terrible trident. And Krishna, with his club, he just destroyed the trident. Mura sent so many different weapons, and Krishna destroyed all of these weapons. And then finally, Mura himself, he attacked Garuda. And he threw weapons at Garuda. And Krishna just took an arrow and made that weapon disintegrate. Then he started pounding on Krishna. And Krishna effortlessly took his mighty Sudarshan Chakra and severed the five heads of Buddha, and Buddha fell back into his waters. Shri Krishna Bhagavan ki. After all of the various layers of the protective fortress of Bhomasura were destroyed, and alas, Mura was destroyed, Bhomasura himself came out with all of his armies. Armies of mighty warriors, all riding upon formidable elephants and chariots and horses. And they came charging out. And all the multitude of soldiers, Krishna just started firing on all of them with his arrows and his club. And soon the whole battlefield was just covered with severed heads and arms and legs and trunks and blood. And Garuda decided this was such an exciting fight, he wanted to participate also. So as the fight was going on, these massive elephants who were carrying, it was the Lord was fighting against the soldiers, and Garuda was fighting against the carriers. And he started beating the elephants with his wings and biting them with his beak and scratching them with his claws. And the elephants were in so much pain. pain, they just all ran away with their masters. And when all the elephants ran away, Bhumasura was left completely alone on the battlefield facing the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. Bhumasura, he took his mighty weapons and started throwing them at Krishna. And Krishna, effortlessly with his clubs and his own weapons, he just completely disintegrated all of Bhumasura's. And Bhumasura was furious with anger. He was doing everything within his power. He attacked Garuda. He attacked Garuda himself and started trying to beat Garuda with his clubs. And for a Garuda, it was like an elephant being hit by a flower garland. Anyways, Krishna decided this demon must die. But he didn't want to kill the demon, because the demon was the son of the Mother Earth, the goddess of the earth, without permission. So this battle was such a raging war that Krishna looked at Satyabhama and said, "What should I do?" And Satyabhama said, "Just kill him." And since Mother Earth is the expansion of Satyabhama, Krishna got the blessings. Then he took his mighty and celebrated Sudarshan Chakra and severed the head of Bhumasura, who fell to the ground dead. Sri Krishna Bhagavan Ki. After all of the armies, Mura and Narakasura lay on the battlefield, defeated by the prowess of Krishna, Krishna entered into the palace. And as he came into the palace, there were 16,100 queens. They were all young girls. And actually, each and every one of them was an expansion of Lakshmi Devi, the goddess of fortune. And as we explained, they were all the beautiful, beautiful, chaste and lovely daughters of demigods, rishis, and kings of various places. And they had all been kidnapped by Bhumasura. When Krishna entered into the palace, they all fell in spiritual love with Krishna. When they saw the beauty of the Supreme Lord, their eyes and their hearts just drank that beauty, and they surrendered their lives at his lotus feet. And although they did not say anything, each and every one of these 16,100 princesses, within their heart of hearts, they were simply longing and praying for Krishna to be their husband. After seeing the beauty of Krishna, who could possibly want any mortal man to be their husband? Hare Krishna. So this was their prayer. And Krishna could understand that within their hearts they had pure, uncontaminated devotion. And in this spirit they were praying for Krishna to be their husband. So Krishna cast his most merciful glance upon them. And he also understood that these girls could never find another husband anyway, because in the Vedic culture, a woman of high character is within the custody of her father until the day of her marriage. And then the father personally gives the responsibility to the new husband to protect the daughter. But they were forcibly taken out of the custody of their father. And in this way, they were living in the palace of an asura.
So Krishna wanted to fulfill their uncontaminated, pure, loving desire to serve him as wives. And therefore Krishna sent 16,100 palanquins with a princess on each one back to Dwarka. He also sent 50 beautiful, beautiful white elephants, each with four tusks, who were descendants of Airavata, from the palace of Bhomasura back to Dwarka. And there was so much wealth, so many riches, so much jewels and gold and precious articles that Bhomasura had stolen from the various defeated opponents. He sent so much back to Dwarka. And then Krishna himself returned to Dwarka. But on the way, he decided to deliver, personally hand deliver, back to the demigods what they requested him to obtain. So he went to Amaravati, to Indra's abode, and there he personally gave the earrings that Bhomasura had stolen back to Aditi, the mother of Indra. These earrings were shining jewels and gold that shone brilliantly, heavenly jewels. And then he gave the umbrella back to Varuna. And Satyabhama, she was actually helping Krishna to give back these gifts, and they gave back the peaks of that celebrated mountain, which is one of the favorite vacation places of the demigods. And all else that the demigods longed to get returned, Satyabhama and Krishna gave them back. And Indra was so pleased, he was so happy, that he placed his head and his crown on Krishna's lotus feet. And he worshipped Krishna with folded hands. So being satisfied by the worship of Indra, Krishna and Satyabhama left, riding on the bird carrier Garuda. And on the way, they were passing Indra's garden, and they saw the trees of the Parijata flowers. Ah. When Satyabhama saw the Parijata flower, she said, "This is, Rukmini has this flower. I would like a flower also from Parijata." Because these flowers, they do not wilt and become spoiled like the flowers of this world. The flower actually lasts for a long, long time and maintains its texture, its freshness, its fragrance. These are heavenly flowers. And one Parijata flower can make an entire garden so opulent and fragrant. So Krishna said to Satyabhama, "Why you only want one flower? I will give you the whole tree." So Krishna plucked the Parijata tree and gave it to Satyabhama. When Indra and the devatas saw this, they became very angry. "What is this nonsense Krishna doing? He took a Parijata tree from our garden without our authority." So Indra became so much disturbed that he brought his armies and he attacked Krishna and Satyabhama. And Krishna very easily defeated Indra and brought him back to his same position as a humble servant. And after Krishna just totally humbled Indra, and then Indra begged forgiveness and prayed to Krishna for his mercy. This is the nature of people who approach God with a materialistic motive.
Indra is a great soul, but Krishna uses him to display so many lessons to the world. A materialistic person who worships the Lord will be very, very anxious to glorify the Lord and serve the Lord and honor the Lord with all one's energy, as long as he needs something from the Lord. So when Indra was completely defeated by Bhaumasura, and his mother was suffering because her earrings were taken away, and he was suffering and all the demigods were suffering, they turned to Krishna because there was no other shelter. And when Krishna fulfilled their material desires by giving them back their material attachments, Indra was so much a devotee. He was worshipping the Lord and humbling himself before the Lord and offering prayers to the Lord. But as soon as the Lord took something away from him, he became the Lord's enemy. This is the tendency of a person who is too much infatuated by material attachments. When we need something from God, we worship him. But when things do not go our way, we reject him. We become his enemy. Srila Prabhupada explains during the Second World War, the German soldiers were in the battlefield, and the Allied soldiers from England and other countries, France, they were in another battle. They were fighting against them in the battlefield. So the wives of the German soldiers were going to church and praying to God, please send our husbands back alive. And the wives of the Allied forces were going to church and they were praying to God, please bring our husbands back alive. Prabhupada says, what is God supposed to do? He didn't start the war. It's because of their gross material attachments and their wanting to exploit his property. They started the war. They're fighting the war. And both sides want to win and praying to God, bring my husbands back alive. So Krishna just let destiny take its course. And so many of the German soldiers were killed. And then the wives became atheists. What kind of God is this? We prayed. We even offered you so many flowers and we offered you so many pujas and so many things we did for you, and you killed. Our husbands died anyway. Either there is no God, or if there is a God, what is the use of such a God? He's impotent. So they became atheists. So Prabhupada explains, this is the nature of people who are materially attached, even who approach religion. They are so foolish. They want God to give them material benefits and material relief, but if, due to their own sinful karma, they have to suffer, they blame God. They reject God. So this was so powerfully personified by Indra. When Krishna gave Indra what he wanted for his sense gratification, Indra was such a devotee. He worshipped him. But as soon as he took something away, he not only took away the wealth of one Parijata tree, but he also took away some of Indra's pride. Because Indra's thinking, I am the king of heaven. Whatever happens in this kingdom has to be done under my direction. And Krishna didn't follow his rule. He took a Parijata tree without asking Indra's permission. This is the ego of a materialistic person. When you think you are a controller, when you think you are very great, people have to have your permission. If you want to breathe, you should ask my permission. This is to the extent people can become so infatuated and intoxicated by power. The more power you have, the more you want to control others, and it becomes intolerable for anyone to do anything without your blessings. So Indra was humbled before everyone, and he didn't like this. So he fought Krishna. He attacked Krishna. But Krishna made him look like a total fool in front of everyone by just beating him down. And sometimes when we become infatuated and intoxicated due to material attachments and power and prestige and high learning and good abilities, Krishna just has to cut us down and to show the world that we're just helpless, defeated, insignificant creatures. Srila Prabhupada used this word. He said Indra was shown to be a defeated, insignificant creature after Krishna defeated him. So then Krishna returned to Dwarka, and he had personally arranged 16,100 beautiful palaces to be erected for each of these queens. Previously, Krishna had already married 8 wonderful queens, headed by Rukmini, Satyabhama, Jambavati, Satya, Nagnajiti, many beautiful queens, Lakshmana, and so on. So, to just fulfill the desires of these pure devotees, Krishna decided to have a grand marriage ceremony for each and every one of them, simultaneously. Marriage like no one has seen on this earth. When Krishna wants to get married in Dwarka, can you imagine the festivities and the opulences and the decorations of such a marriage? Here in Bombay, the big wealthy people, they have a marriage in a racetrack. Really, they do. The biggest, wealthiest people with the most prestige, they get married at a horse racetrack. Where people just go to gamble and bet. And they decorate it with so many, they spend crores of rupees just in decorations. And they bring in cooks from all parts of the world. And they have so many different types of preparations. Just hundreds of preparations. There's whole sections, Italian cuisine, and Chinese cuisine, and French cuisine, and African cuisine. And then there's American cuisine. Whatever that is, no one knows. It's kind of a mixture of everything else with extra salt and pepper. And then they had Rajasthani cuisine, and Tamil Nadu cuisine, and Karnataka cuisine, and Maharashtrian cuisine, and Himalayan cuisine. And they had cuisines from everywhere. Everywhere you go, and there's all like 10, 15 preparations in each of these places. And then they have Arabian cuisine and Iranian cuisine. And all these smells and fragrances, the crores of rupees lakhs just on food. And the poor guest, how much can a person eat? There's hundreds and hundreds of preparations, all different varieties, and you're just and everyone's in complete anxiety because they don't know which place to go. They're asking around, which one did you like best? My stomach's only this big, I can only fit so much, I want to find the best. Well, they're all good. then you don't know what to do. And there's bands playing, and as the dignitaries walk in, people give them garlands and announce on the loudspeaker, "The Prime Minister has just come in. The Honorable Governor of Maharashtra has just come in. The Honorable Head of the Mafia has just come in." And this way everyone is being glorified. And then the brahmacharis have come in. So this is considered something very, very big in this world, such a marriage. And with what they wear, practically the whole nation can feed the poor people for a day or a year just on the money of the silks and the jewels of the brides and the grooms. Such very, very costly garments they're wearing. And not only the brides and the grooms, but the sisters and the cousins and the uncles and the aunties, and what to speak of the mother and the father and the brothers and the sisters and the grandparents. They're all decorated so beautifully with all brand new fresh jewelry and silks and whatever else they wear. So many nice cosmetics and perfumes. And at the end of the night, then they have to come home and they have to live with each other. They have to tolerate each other for the rest of their lives. Hare Krishna. But this is just the marriages of Mumbai. Can you imagine the marriage of Krishna to his queens in Dwarka? What kind of marriage? What kind of palaces and what facilities? And Krishna expanded himself into 16,100 forms, each unique form. They were each, according to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, they were all Krishna's original Dwarkanath form. They were Prakash, expansions. And of these forms, they all had unique qualities just to match the particular queen that he was going to marry. And not only that, but just see Krishna's power in opulence. Not only did he expand himself into 16,100 forms, and without any energy, he created a wonderful, wonderful marriage ceremony in each of these 16,100, all with beautiful bands and festivities and so much decorations. But you can't have a marriage unless your mother and father, Vasudev and Devaki, and all your relatives, Ugrasena. What would happen if they went to one marriage and not the other 16,000? 99. That would have been very difficult. So Krishna had Devaki and Vasudev, Ugrasena, and all of his relatives and all of his friends. He had all of them expand into 16,100 forms. So everyone was at every wedding. Sri Krishna Bhagavan Ki. And in this way, Krishna married 16,108 princesses. Each beautiful, beautiful goddesses of fortune. And then Krishna lived with each of these 16,108 queens individually. It's not that they had to wait for their turn. Like you stand in line and take a number. I'm number 16,007. I still have so many more. In the waiting line, queue. There was no queues. Krishna made every one of them completely happy.
He was living with each wife. And each wife was thinking, Krishna's only with me. Even though they actually knew he's with everyone else, still in their heart of hearts they were thinking, he loves me so much, he's just only with me. And he would joke with each wife. When Narada Muni came to Dwarka, he wanted to see, what is this Krishna? Because yogis could actually expand themselves, but when yogis expand themselves, it's like mirror images. They all have to do the same thing. If one form raises the arm, all the other forms raise their arms. If a yogi expands himself into eight forms, if one sits down, all the other seven sit down. If one says Hari Bol, all the other seven say Hari Bol. So this is a power, and to do this is a great mystic feat. Who can do that today? Expand themselves into seven or eight forms. But Krishna expanded himself 16,108 forms, and when Narada Muni, he went into different palaces, and Krishna was doing something different in each palace. One palace, he's playing with one of his babies, his sons. Another palace, he was playing chess with one of his friends. Another palace, he was worshipping the Brahmins and giving cows and charity away. Another palace, he was sitting with one of his queens and talking very, very confidential subject matters. This way, Narada Muni was so much in bliss to see Krishna's supreme unlimited powers. How Krishna lived with each queen. And it is described, he would sleep in the beautiful royal beds with the queens, and the queens would just be so much in the ecstasy of love of God, they would dread the rising of the sun. Because then Krishna would go to the Sudharma assembly house to perform his duties to the residents of Dwarka of the Yadu dynasty. And when the rooster would crow and the sun would rise, then the fateful moment that they all were praying would never come would happen. Krishna would get out of the bed. And these pure, unalloyed servants of Krishna would just assist Krishna in every way. And he would take his bath and he would meditate on himself, just to show that we should all meditate on Krishna. And he would do puja. And the first thing every morning, he would worship Brahmins and devotees and give charity to them. And after performing all these beautiful morning duties, he would come out and his queens would all be waving goodbye and offering their pranams with their hearts. And then all the 16,108 forms would merge into one. And then he would come into the Sudharma assembly house. Because there was no need for 16,188 Krishnas when they're all sitting next to each other in the parliament of the Yadus. They would all become one. And then when it was time for him to go home to his palaces, he would expand again into 16,108 forms. And in each of these queens, Krishna begot 10 children. That means Krishna had how many children? 1,61,000 children. That means 161,000 children plus. And then from each of those children, he had 10 grandchildren. How many is that? Huh? So many. He had over 1 million people, family members, direct family members. And yet everyone was so happy, blissfully maintained by Krishna. Now we, here in India, family planning. They have this whole government program to keep your family small. Because after all, how will you feed them and how will you keep proper clothing? And there's this population is exploding. But Krishna had over 1,600,000 family members, children and grandchildren. And yet everything was supplied in full because Krishna is the Supreme Personality of God. And they were all living on a little island called Dwarka. And Ugrasena had so many millions of servants and guards, and there were millions of soldiers within the Yadu dynasty. There was actually billions of people living on the island of Dwarka. And it was only a few miles in diameter. So how is that possible? For Krishna, everything is possible. Krishna has achintya shakti, inconceivable transcendental potencies. And there were no traffic jams. There were billions of people living in an island called Dwarka, and there was no traffic jams, there was no pollution, there was no traffic lights. Everyone lived in big, spacious, beautiful gardens, wearing beautiful clothes. Everyone was dancing and singing. This is Krishna's abode. In reference to Bhoma-asura, Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explained one time when Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was walking through the streets of Sri Navadvip Dham, he heard someone chanting the various names of Lord Vishnu. And that devotee chanted the name of Shukara, or Varahadev. So the Lord became ecstatic in the mood of Varahadev, and he ran to the house of Murari Gupta. He entered into the house, he went into Murari Gupta's temple room, and he manifested the form of Lord Varahadev. And Murari Gupta, in a mood of service, gave a little water pot to Lord Chaitanya in that form of Varaharup, and Lord Chaitanya took that water pot, which represented the earth, and placed it upon his tusks. And then the Lord instructed Murari Gupta to glorify him, and he glorified him. So many beautiful words. And Lord Chaitanya explained how dear his devotees are to him, and how he cannot tolerate one who offends his devotees. He said, even if a person is my own son, I cannot tolerate if that person offends my devotees. And the evidence is this, that when I took this form of Varahadev, I lifted Mother Earth in my tusks. And when I did that, through my very touch, I impregnated the earth, and she bore a child for me. And that child's name was Bhoma. And he was raised by his mother. He was the son of God, raised by his mother in a life surrounded by great devotion. But somehow or other, when he was young, he became friendly with Banasura. And due to that bad association, Bhoma became Bhoma-asura. Srila Prabhupada explains in this particular chapter that we are reading of Srimad Bhagavatam that association is so important. Even if you have the best possible association with the best pure devotees, even if you're the son of Krishna himself and the mother of earth, who's an expansion of the goddess of fortune herself. If you choose to enjoy life in the association of materialistic people, you lose all your virtues. Due to the association of Bana, Bhoma became envious of his own father. He became envious of the devotees and the Brahmins, and he became so addicted to material life and the powers that he received from being the son of the earth and the son of the Lord. He thought they were his own powers and he began to misuse them. Punar Mushtika Bhava. He took the powers of God to use against God. That is the problem with the infatuation of great opulence. We think it our own. We use it against the interest of the real proprietor. So from Bhoma, the son of God, he became known as Narakasura. Hellish, hellish demon. And he just defeated, conquered, tortured, killed, kidnapped, plundered. But ultimately, he offended devotees. All these beautiful women, they were all Krishna's devotees. And he offended them. And when he offended the devotees, Lord Chaitanya, in his form of Varaha, said, "Then I could not tolerate. I destroyed him." Please know, even if a person is my own son, if he offends my devotees, I must destroy him. So we should never be envious of Vaishnavas. We should always aspire to be the humble servant of the servant of the servant of the Vaishnavas. This is the great lesson to be learned from this wonderful narration. Thank you very much. Is there any questions? Yes?
Hare Krishna Maharaj. Maharaj, what would be the approximate area of the city of Dwarka according to today's calculations?
It is explained in Srimad Bhagavatam exactly. Does anyone remember? We can tell you later. But it is in the 10th canto as well as in Krishna book. It describes the dimensions of the island of Dwarka.
And it's submerged in the sea right now, today's. It's submerged in the sea, I believe. It's submerged under the sea at present, or?
At the time of Krishna, when he decided to put the final end to his final chapter of his lila in this earth, most of Dwarka went under the sea. Some parts of it still remain, but most of it went under the sea. Other questions? Srila Prabhupada ki. Thank you very much.